Welcome to Private Midwives Podcast, everybody. My name is Sharon Gaimon, and I am a caseload midwife and a midwifery matron at Private Midwives. Today, I'm very excited to be able to introduce one of our lovely midwives at Private Midwives, who is a specialist screening midwife and fetal medicine midwife. She has over 40 years experience in the health services, and she is a true oracle of information around screening for us at Private Midwives and with her own website. So today I'd like to introduce you all to Angie Bowles. Welcome, Angie. Lovely to have you here.
Hi, Sharon. Good to talk to you.
It's lovely to have you on today. Thank you so much for agreeing with this. I think that screening is such a minefield out there for people. It will be so lovely for them to have to listen to you today, to explain it all, and for them to have a better understanding of what it is they're getting themselves into, if that's all right.
That's a really good way of expressing it. Yeah, get themselves into it.
I just wanted to start first and ask you to tell us about yourself. Tell us about your journey and what brought you into the specialising in screening.
Yes, absolutely. So as you say, I have been around in healthcare for an awfully long time now. I think I probably properly qualify as being old these days. Broad experience is the other way.
Fabulous.
Bless your heart. So yeah, I started out in nursing, but always knew I wanted to be a midwife. Had a fairly interesting, circuitous journey, but finally got to where I needed to be, and then worked as a midwife in the NHS for a number of years. During that time, I took on various roles and covering most areas of midwifery. But my last job in the NHS was as lead midwife for screening and fetal medicine. And it was an area that I absolutely loved. I think it's massively important, but it's almost invisible to most people. Most people tend to take up offers that are made to them without thinking too much about what the consequences of those investigations might be. And it's only the ones who get information that maybe they didn't want or is very confusing that came to my attention. And I was privileged to walk with a lot of families in very complicated situations with all sorts of different conclusions. Now, as you say, I've been with Private Midwives for the last 5 years, and a very happy 5 years that's been. And I love the fact that these days I do a real mixture of beautiful, straightforward, normal midwifery, welcoming babies both at home and in hospital, if that's what the parents prefer. But I also am able to do a fair bit of the specialist work. And some of that is very short term. People phone me, we'll have a single chat. I can give them some pointers or some questions they might want to go and ask and be clear about who they ask those questions of. And other people, I'll accompany them throughout their journey to the conclusion of the pregnancy, whatever that ends up being.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great that you are a fabulous resource for the organisation, obviously, because you're the oracle and we all use you. and you're always on
pressure hand, belt.
That's fabulous. I mean, obviously, I've developed my role as the screening lead within the organisation, and I know that you and I have had many a phone call, and you've definitely helped me with my development of it. And there's always going to be questions, and I always know that you're going to be there. So that's fabulous. I think that what we should start by doing, Angie, is let's set out what does screening mean and what are screening tests?
Yeah, that's a really good place to start, I think, because this is language that's familiar to those of us who work in healthcare. But for the average person who doesn't normally deal with healthcare, it means nothing. So this is the gobbledygook that we tend to talk. So let's get rid of some gobbledygook. So when we say screening test, what we're basically doing is we're offering some form of test to somebody who we currently think is well, healthy, doing all the right things. But what we're looking for is signs that things might not all be as straightforward as we thought. And in a broad sense, you could say that virtually all of antenatal care is screening. We're taking somebody who is doing, you know, who is pregnant, and you could say that that's the ultimate expression of health, that you're carrying the next generation. But what we're doing is we're doing checkups that are looking to see if nature's got wobbly and, you know, is anything potentially brewing that could be problematic to the woman or to the baby. When we talk about formalized screening tests, there is a good resource on the NHS website. If you just put antenatal screening into gov.uk, you'll get a timeline of all the different formal screening programs. And the time that most people will think about screening, if they think about it at all, is when they are invited to go along for their very first scan in pregnancy, usually around 11 to 12 weeks. And at that time, they're then asked, do you want the screening test? And that's the moment where most people go, what?
What?
Yeah. What does that mean? And I think one thing to be really clear about is you need information before you're faced with that question so you can make an intelligent answer to it.
And it's crazy, isn't it? Do you know what? It's crazy because I remember when it first came out, I think it was when I was starting my midwifery journey, actually. So back in maybe 2002, 2003, they were talking about the nuchal screening, and it was supposed to be, you know, midwives was being trained at that time to do the counselling part first. It actually was headlined as counselling, wasn't it?
Yes.
And now I'm not even sure that any of that happens, does it, anymore?
Well, it still should be a part of early contact. I mean, in that very first contact with a midwife, there's a huge amount that every midwife is trying to get through. And a part of that is to prepare the woman for what might come next, what's cropping up. And that includes talking about, well, you know, we offer blood tests as part of that start of pregnancy consultation. We're also trying to prepare that client for, do you want to have a scan at this point in your pregnancy? And if you do want to have the scan, do you want to have the test that's offered alongside it? But all of that takes a lot of time. And if you've got half an hour to do the whole process, I mean, I these days regularly spend at least 2 hours doing that start of pregnancy consultation. And that's for somebody who's basically straightforward. If they've got a complicated medical history, or they've got a lot of fears that I need to address, that's going to take me a whole lot longer. And if you've run through answering all the questions that the computer requires you to ask for very good reasons, and you're filling in boxes in the book, as we do an initial screen of, are there things that I need to take into account for this particular patient, this client, by the time you then get to, oh, what's going to happen when you leave here? Well, the next thing that's going to happen is you'll be offered a scan. You're sort of thinking, I've been here for ages. I've now run out of time. I've got another client who's waiting for me. Mm. And I think that's probably why where it gets lost.
I agree. I mean, we obviously, private midwives, or, you know, in the private sector, we have that luxury of time, don't we?
Absolutely.
We can spend as much time as we need to spend with people. And, you know, that's a good thing. But obviously our colleagues in the NHS, you're right, they have a certain, they're on a time scale. And they have to get so much, they have to take so much information, give so much information in that time. I'm sure that it gets lost in that. And
I think it does. I mean, there's so much evidence, isn't there, about, you know, if you give people loads of information, they can take a very small proportion of it in.
Yeah.
And it depends what somebody's prior knowledge is. You know, we all know that there will be some clients you start talking to and they've already read all of this stuff. They understand what schedule of antenatal care usually looks like for most people. They understand what tests might crop up for conversation, but other people come in knowing absolutely nothing. And that's nobody's fault. That's just how it is.
I mean, what do you think is the most important thing that people need to know about screening or screening tests?
For me, the most important thing is you have a choice and you're a grown-up, you're an adult. If you're not, you shouldn't be having a baby. It would be my first point. And these are decisions you're making on behalf of your baby. And so your parenting journey starts right here. Because once you have a test, it's like once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back in. So if you don't want to know the information, don't do the test.
That's it. You've got to think about the consequences of that part of the test, haven't you? Because then that will lead on. So you have to go, you know, look past that. You have to look at the whole picture.
You have to look at the what if. And that's hard, isn't it? Because you know, we're all a mixture of excited and terrified when we're first pregnant. And not doing a test and not finding out problematic information doesn't make that information go away. But I would question for some people whether having that information throughout the duration of the pregnancy is helpful.
Yeah.
As an example, if your religious or moral beliefs are that under no circumstances would you end a pregnancy? Whatever you found out, it would not be an option for you to end that pregnancy. You could question how useful it is for that person to know that their baby is facing a very complicated future. Could you make an argument that says, might it be better for them to find out once their baby's here?
Yeah, at birth.
But I mean, I can argue that every which way. And that's where the counselling around these things gets incredibly complicated. But there are absolutely people I've met for whom I think it probably would have been better if they had never had that information at all.
Not known. And of course, it's really important for them to know that it is a screening thing. It isn't a diagnostic thing. I think that's
Now you're onto something. Yeah,
I know. I mean, I think
the difference between screening and diagnosis.
Exactly. So complex, isn't it, really? I remember talking about experiences. I had a client who had the 12-week nuchal screening and had a really high probability from that, but she chose not to do any further screening. So again, I questioned, you know, the quality of the counseling prior to that, because if she knew she was never going to have further screening, then was there really point to the first part of the screening? But I mean, again, you know, like you say, you can argue that all day, but I remember being at that birth and everything was expected, obviously. And I think it was really, really high. It was something like 1 in 12 or something. It was so high.
Yeah,
the baby was fine. The baby was fine and not affected at all.
And that's what that probability said. That probability said 11 out of 12 is that this baby is absolutely fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the problem with probability, that if you're the one, it doesn't matter if it's 1 in 1,000,000 because you're the one.
Yeah.
Equally, you know, if it's a 1 in 2 and yours is the baby who's not affected, well, the test was wrong, so to speak. That's what a screening test does. It tells you basically likely or not likely. It doesn't tell you about your baby. And that's how we,
if you think about that, then how can we as midwives working in the way that we do, how can we help people to decide whether to have tests or not?
I think this goes back to something you said just now. It's about, do you want to know? You know, would the information this test can produce, or that it can suggest in most cases, would this be information that would be valuable to you? Now, what most people seem to do is they go into screening tests thinking, well, first thing they'll say is, I just want to know that everything's all right. So we need to shoot that myth out straight away. There isn't a test that can say everything's all right. I wish there was. All the tests are doing is saying, is there a greater chance than we would have guessed that this condition affects your pregnancy or affects your baby? I mean, let's use the example of Down syndrome, because that's the test. That's what most people, if they know anything about the early screening test, with the scan, the combined test, they will tell you that it's for Down syndrome. Yes. It is also looking for the chance of Edwards syndrome and Patau syndrome, which are less common, but still relatively common chromosomal differences. So if you have ever thought about what would it mean for you if your baby had Down syndrome, and most people have never thought about that because it's actually quite scary to think your baby might be different to the baby who you maybe expected in your mind.
Yeah.
But if you'd thought about it and you had thought, deep in my heart, I actually don't feel that the right thing to do would be to continue this pregnancy, then absolutely it's valuable to have that test. If, however, you're at the other end of the spectrum and all these opinions are valid and real and whatever, if you're at the other end of the spectrum and said, do you know what, actually, yeah, I accept that Down syndrome is different to maybe what I originally would have, who I guess my baby would be, and it's not quite the average, that's okay, still my baby, and I'm going to love my baby whether they have Down syndrome or don't have Down syndrome, whether they have blonde hair, ginger hair, whatever characteristics they have, I'm going to love them because they're my baby, then you could say, well, maybe for them there is not so much value in the test. But all of this, the precursor is to think the unthinkable and to think that these tests might not give you reassurance. They might actually go the other way and give you something new but specific to worry about.
I think it's so important that people have an understanding of what all of this is. So many times we speak to women, maybe it's before we're booking them in the private sector, you know, sometimes, and they sort of say, oh yeah, I'm going for my scan. I'm going for my scan at 12 weeks. And oh, okay. And are you, you know, are you having the screening? Sorry? You know,
yes.
The screening, yeah. That's actually, you know, the purpose of this. Know this appointment, and that's what it's all about. And some, the amount of people that I'm going for the scan because they want to see their baby, and they don't take it on board. It's not their fault, obviously. It's all about how they process the information, how the information has been given to them. I think it's hard, isn't it? It's so hard to then express to them about how important, you know, what you're accepting is, and whether you're actually in the right frame of mind to consent to this, because do you have enough knowledge? Do you have enough knowledge to be going into this? I think it would be really good to look at what these tests are. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what actually is the combined test?
Okay, so this is the scan and blood test that's offered, as we say, at this sort of 11 to 12 week point. There's a little bit of variation on that, but there's a pretty close time window. So we have to start with the knowledge that the woman might have about when her last period was, when she's likely to have conceived, to guess when to do that scan. And what that sometimes means is that when the woman goes for the scan, it'll be discovered that actually either the pregnancy is further advanced than she thought it was, or not as advanced. And so sometimes it can be that the sonographer has to say, actually, you're not quite in the right number of weeks, so we need to bring you back in a few days or a week or whatever. But the combined test, what it does, it's called the combined test because it combines a number of bits of information. First of all, it takes the maternal age. So that's the age that the woman will be when the baby's born, or when it's estimated to be born. Now, of course, this gets complicated because if it's IVF, was that an egg that was frozen? Because it actually is based on the age that the woman was when the egg was collected, and then project forward to 9 months further from there.
So to complicate things.
Yeah, complicate it even further, of course. We're seeing an increasing number of women these days using donor eggs.
Yeah.
In which case, the woman who is carrying the pregnancy, frankly, for this purpose, it's irrelevant how old she is. We're interested in the age of the donor. And you can understand why some people will go for that scan and start getting asked these questions and think, whoa, hang on, this is very personal. I don't think I need to share this with you. You're only here to do the scan. And that can set up a lot of discomfort in that initial contact. So maternal age with all its problems, yes? And that works on the, you know, it's considered relevant because it is believed that the older a woman is, the more chance there is that she might have a baby affected by a chromosomal difference. So that's that bit. Then during the scan, the sonographer is looking to see that baby is fundamentally made right, but specific to this particular test is to measure a little collection of fluid at the back of the neck that we call the nuchal translucency, or the NT. And you'll see that on the scan report, and it'll just say nuchal translucency, brackets, NT. And it'll tell you the number of millimetres. Anything up to 3.5 millimetres for this purpose is considered to be normal range. Normal. Everything varies in biology. Some people are big, some people are small, and that's true of all these things. So about 3.5 is considered normal. Then they'll invite you to have a blood test. And in that blood test, they're looking for the level of beta-HCG. That's the pregnancy hormone that makes the urine pregnancy test work. And a protein called PAPA, which is a protein that comes out of the placenta. So it's specific to this pregnancy. And they take all those bits of information and essentially feed it into a computer algorithm. And that will spill out a statistical chance. So it'll say one in something chance. So as you say, a one in 12 chance, a one in 10,000 chance. Those numbers are so massively affected by each individual bit.
Yeah.
People often get really worried. They say, well, you know, 5 years ago, the result I got for my first baby was this, but now I've got this. Well, yeah, you're 5 years older. So that will fundamentally affect it. There's a lot of different factors that will affect that. But then we apply, or the NHS screening committee, because this is the whole point of screening, is we're saying, who is at greater chance than we might have expected? And therefore, shall we offer them some additional testing if they'd like to take it up to try and get to a diagnosis here, to get some certainty? And so we have to pick a rather arbitrary level, and the level that currently is operating in the NHS is, if you get a chance of 1 in 150 for each of these three conditions, 150 is the sort of the cutoff line. So if your chance is 1 in 151, that's considered a low chance result. That's considered the same as a 1 in 10,000 chance. But we can sit here and go, there's quite a big difference between it. But there has to be a level somewhere.
Yeah.
If you get a result of 1 in 149 or 1 in 12 or anything in between,
yeah,
you will be contacted by the screening midwife from the local NHS, assuming you're having this in the NHS, who will then say to you, look, this is the chance that has the test calculates, which is potentially a greater chance than we would have guessed, you having a baby affected by one of these conditions, and they'll tell you which of the conditions is suspected. Do you want to take up the opportunity to have some more testing? They'll give you some more information. So really important to bear in mind, the analogy people use, they call screening like a sieve. So it's a, yes, it's a sieve with very big holes.
Yes, catches a certain amount of the population.
Yeah, we're trying to catch a number of people that we can physically manage to offer additional testing to, bearing in mind the impact on the health service, the cost of that, and of course, the impact on the individual. Now, the problem we have is that the combined test isn't actually a very good test. It's not very specific, and it gets it wrong in both directions. So it will give a low chance result sometimes where a baby is affected, but the test will, because of the vagaries of biology, will say actually it doesn't look terribly likely. It's not saying it's not going to happen. It's not saying no chance. It's saying low chance. And, you know, low chance things do happen sometimes. There will be people out there who have a low chance result. They think, fine, that's that, done and dusted. Later on, it could be discovered that their baby is affected by one of those very conditions. At the other extreme, there'll be people who get the phone call. And I used to be the midwife who made those phone calls. And I tell you, it's a really hard thing to phone total strangers who give them this information. And you're telling them that it looks like there is a significant chance that the baby that they're currently growing is affected by one of these conditions. And most people lose the ability to think once you've said that to them. And I completely get that. Yeah. But what we're saying to them is, do you want to do further testing? Now, I know that a large, large proportion of those people who I phoned up were never going to have actually a real issue facing their baby. There was never going to be any chromosomal difference, but the test that they've had can't identify that. So I was in a moral bind of having to say to them, when I first started, all I could say to them is, your choice is to hold that knowledge and know that there's a chance, probably greater than you originally thought, or you can go and have a diagnostic test. But the diagnostic test, and there we're talking about two tests of amniocentesis and CVS, yes, those tests are tests that will give a yes or no answer. But doing those tests brings with it a chance of miscarriage. Now, it's an impossible dilemma for most people in that moment. Yeah, what absolutely. Do I do? But I knew that some of those people who were opting, you know, saying, well, now you've bought me this information, I don't feel I can just hold that uncertainty. I now need to have that test. The vast majority of them who were having a test which has an increased chance of miscarriage associated with it actually had babies who were completely chromosomally normal anyway. You know, and that, I guess, might have been the client that you referred to who had that test and then chose not to do a diagnostic test.
Yeah.
She may have thought for her that actually I can't put my baby at risk. Morally, I can't do that. Now, the good news is that, of course, this is where what are now termed the non-invasive tests come in. So that's things like that people will refer to as the Harmony test, which is just one simple brand of these tests. You know, it's a bit like not every vacuum cleaner is a Hoover. You know, there are lots that have different brand names on them, do the job perfectly well, and all come from the same sort of technology.
Would you, I mean, just before you go on to the teeth, I mean, do you think that it's a natural progression? Because it's, again, isn't it? I know you're going to talk about this, but it is, again, another screening. So is it a natural progression? I mean, I know, like you were saying, like in the end, if you're having it in the NHS, if you're having your baby in the NHS or the screening and the testing, but obviously I also want to touch on like us in the private sector. You know, if the client is agreeing to the new court and obviously will have had all the information, and then they get this high chance result, is the natural progression for us to say to them, then, you know, obviously there's another screening to do? Or would you, in that sense, would you be sort of suggesting that they skip another screening and actually go for a diagnostic? What's your, you know, best view from your experience?
Oh, these are great questions, Sharon. it's all about context for me. And if somebody has the combined test and they get a low chance result from it, because we know that that test will miss some babies who are affected by these conditions, if this client wants to get greater certainty, greater reassurance about those three conditions, not reassurance that, quote, everything's okay, because remember, we can't do that. But if they want, you know, if somebody, for example, who says, well, actually, my friend has a child who has Down syndrome, and I'm not sure that I could deal with what she deals with, and therefore I need to address this as far as I can, but I don't want to put my baby at risk during pregnancy to find that information out, then absolutely, it makes sense to have the non-invasive test, because it is so much more specific and is so much less likely to get the wrong answer. So in that question, then the question is there any point doing the combined test? If you feel that you should do the non-invasive, which we could say is the gold standard screening test, because it is still a screening test, and I can talk to that in a minute if you want. If you want to have the best test there is, that the NHS can't offer to everybody because it would be too expensive, and we as taxpayers can't afford to pay for everything. But if somebody does want to do that, then of course we can offer them. There are plenty of providers as well as us who can offer non-invasive testing without the need to do a combined test first. However, I always say to people, if you're having non-invasive testing, I would still recommend that you have a scan around about 12 weeks, because there's a lot of development that we need to just confirm is happening normally. And remember that the non-invasive test is only looking for the chance of three conditions. It's not looking at those structural things, like very basic things. Has baby got two arms and two legs that have developed? Has baby's abdomen completely closed over the internal organs? Has the skull closed? Those things, the only way we can know is on a scan. And scans are good at looking at those things. But the other part, as I mentioned before, this thing, the NT, even if you've had this gold standard test, the NIPT, for looking for chromosomal issues, it's still worth measuring that at this point in pregnancy, because it can be an indicator of there being a structural heart problem. Otherwise, we wouldn't know about until potentially at 20 weeks, when the sonographer looks again in more detail at the now more developed heart, they can spot that. So there is still relevance in having the scan and having the nuchal translucency measured.
I agree wholeheartedly, because there's also, you haven't touched on it, but there's also the papae. Now, you can't actually, the protein, the papae, doesn't get missed completely if it's not done at that time. You can't do it separately, can you? You can't have a test just to look at, check the papae.
Oh, Sharon, now you're really opening cans of worms.
Well, the thing is, I've been asked this stuff. That's why I'm bringing it up, because, you know, somebody doesn't want. So I've done this counselling and talked about it with a client. And then it's like, so you talk about what the NT looks for, and then you talk about what the NIPT looks for. And then, you know, is there a natural progression? Can you just skip that one to do that one? There is benefit in this. But, you know, I've had women say to me, you know, I don't see the point in that, you know, but so, and then have said to me, so will it check that papae though? Because I've explained to them what the protein and what it all is about the papae. And so now it's like, Oh, okay. So you can't get that separately. Can I have that done separately? No, you can't. So yeah, that's why I'm bringing it up, because actually, if you want that measured, then you have to do the combined test to get that result.
Okay, so now I'm going to go out on a limb
and
give you a very personal take on this. Do you really want your Pepe measured anyway? Is it useful?
Is it useful?
And there is quite a long blog post on my website where I address exactly this. And I think, to be honest, the answer is almost certainly no, it's not very useful.
No.
And a thing that can tell you how not useful it is exactly what you've just mentioned. That if somebody declines the combined test, so somebody going through the standard NHS pathway, if they decline having the combined test, whatever the reason is, nobody will say anything to them about Pepe. There is no requirement within the screening program, and the screening program is very specific about what's expected of people at different stages of the process. But there is no requirement for anybody to say to that woman, there is this thing called Pepe, which is a protein that comes from the placenta, which we don't really understand how to take the levels into account. However, some of us are getting a bit antsy about it. And the only way we can get that is if you do the combined test. And no, it's not offered separately. That's how important it is that we don't test for it. Actually, if it was something that was important, don't you think we'd be suggesting that people have it done?
Yeah, I've had a consultant say it to a client when she was declining the Nucal.
Yeah.
And it was the consultant that said to the client that, you know, well, that's fine. You know, that's your choice, obviously. But then you won't get the Pepe level, and the Pepe level will, you know, could give us an early indication as to whether your baby will grow properly and will be, you know, intrauterine restricted, growth restricted. And
not quite honest.
It's not quite right, is it? It's kind of like on that edge. But yeah, so this is what people are told. It's not the first time I've had it said, which is why I thought it was important to bring the question up.
So thank you.
And I would send people to your website, actually, to read your blog on this so that they can have a good, you know, better understanding in case this is said to them, because we don't want it to influence people to choose things that they weren't originally going to choose, do we? If they've done their research... Right. You know, they've decided that's not what they're going to do. They're maybe going to skip that step and go straight for the NIPTI. And they've made their mind up. They've done their research. And then they have somebody say that to them. It can send them into a spiral. So, I mean, just to mention it again then. So that is your website, which is the
walkingwithyou.org.uk.
Yeah. So there's the blog on there. It's really important that, you know, they go and read that then. I think we're so lucky, aren't we? But in the private sector, you know, our colleagues in the NHS, we talked about, they have time constraints. We have the luxury of time. So we have all this, you know, the continuity as well, this things, it doesn't have to all be done in one appointment, or they can call us about it and that kind of stuff, which,
so lovely, which is isn't
fabulous.
It?
It is so lovely. It feels, makes you feel nice inside.
It does.
I think it's a shame that we can't, I think, having outlets like this and hopefully being able, and your website and getting it out there so that people can see it, it's good to get these things out there, because we want women to have a better understanding. How many times do we, I mean, I know we cringe when people say to us, oh, I'm having that NIPTI because I want to find out the sex of my baby. Let's delve into that a little bit more and let's find out, you know, because we know that that does happen. That happens more than we'd like it to happen, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. And the question has to be, you know, if somebody is saying they're going to have NIPT and we actually ought to avoid using NIPT because that's also a brand name. So, yeah.
How is it?
Yeah, yeah.
I learned something new. I didn't know that.
Let's just
non-invasive.
Yes. So if we just talk about NIPT. So if somebody goes and has NIPT, whichever brand they choose to have,
yes,
because they'd like to find out the sex of their baby. First and foremost, it remains a screening test, so it might not be right. So just put that there. You spend thousands of pounds decorating the nursery on the basis of a screening test. That's a bit bold. You know, the chance of it being wrong. I mean, I've done a lot of these tests. I have once known it to be incorrect, and the lab identified that it looked like the results were a bit SCUIF and offered the woman a retest, showed that indeed the lab were correct to be concerned about what was going on. But technically, it could be incorrect. But also, you can't have this type of non-invasive test without finding out about chromosomal issues. So if you desperately want, for example, you desperately want a girl, you could be in the situation where you get the information, yes, 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 it's wonderful you've got a girl. Oh, but also there's information here that says that your baby is affected by Edwards syndrome. Now, if all you were thinking is, I'm going to find out what colour clothes to buy, was that informed consent?
No, exactly. This is why it's so important, isn't it?
It's terribly important.
That we give women an understanding of what it is they're consenting to and what it is, how they're going to carry that burden of information if they get that heavier burden, you know, how they're going to cope with that. It really does happen.
And it does, often people say, well, I know I'm healthy. There's no problems like that in the family. It's irrelevant. These things are almost without exception chance events that happen at the moment conception and can happen to anybody of any age, of any background.
Absolutely.
It could be you or me or any of us.
So I think moving nicely onto that. So we do find then from a screening test, whether it be the NIPT or NuCoin, you decide then to have further screening. I think it would be good for you to just maybe tell us a little bit about what it entails having an amniocentesis.
So we've got two different tests. There's amniocentesis, which maybe more people have heard of. And then there's another one called chorionic villus sampling, or CVS for short, because it's easier to say. And they are done CVS is done in the first 14 to 15 weeks of pregnancy, if testing is done at that point, and amniocentesis is done thereafter. And the difference is that a CVS is actually going to take a tiny sample from the placenta. Amniocentesis takes a sample of the fluid that surrounds the baby. Now, this is important because the way I was taught biology, and I think most of us were taught biology, was that when the egg and the sperm combine, then those newly made cells, which have all the chromosomes in them, some of those will go off and become the placenta, some will become the eyelashes, some will become toes, and so on and so forth. Yes. With the suggestion, therefore, that the placenta and the baby will have absolutely identical chromosomes all the way through. Problem is, we now know that's not true.
That's not true, yeah.
It makes it a bit tricky. So, in seriousness, you need to bear in mind that it is occasionally with rare biological situations, but not so rare that I haven't really genuinely seen it. You can get a situation where the chromosomes in the placenta are different to the chromosomes in the baby. And what it seems to be, somehow, if there are some extra chromosomes around, sometimes the body's able to sort of quarantine those, if you like, into the placenta. So you could have the situation where the placenta, if you look at it, has extra chromosome 21. And it's extra chromosome 21 that makes Down syndrome. So you could look at the placenta and say, there's extra chromosome 21. This is Down syndrome. But the baby could have completely normal chromosomes. So that is a limitation of testing the placenta. But of course, the advantage of doing CVS is that you can do it a bit earlier, because often people will say, I just want to know as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So we just need, again, this is about the detailed counselling that when you're working in a specialist role, you have to be able to discuss that difference. Because what an amnio is doing is looking at the fluid around the baby. And within that fluid, there's going to be some skin cells from the baby. There's going to be urine that's come through the baby's urinary tract. So what you're picking up is cells from the baby. And so that way you're looking at the baby's chromosomes, which of course is what matters, because once the pregnancy is concluded, the placenta becomes irrelevant. Yes. During the pregnancy, if the placenta is unusual, we just have to be mindful that it might behave slightly unusually. But the general principle, if we want to be absolutely certain about the baby, usually amnio is the test of choice, but that's a very specific individualized discussion. And there are different nuances to that conversation. So I can't give a one size fits all, really.
So how is it done? Talk about how they're both done. So what's
the process? Yeah, both of those are done, inserting a very fine needle through the abdominal wall into the uterus. And almost everybody, when you mention that to them, their thought is, wow, that sounds absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
In practice, the majority of people who have it done say, do you know what? It is a bit weird, but it's no more weird than having an ordinary blood test done. You know, the needle is longer because it needs to be to get to the uterus, but actually the level of discomfort, but we know that different people will feel ordinary blood tests from their arm differently. Some people find it very, very distressing, and some people go, yeah, do what you like. So the needle, it's a abdomen, the abdominal wall is cleaned. In this country, we use scan-guided testing. So the person who's doing the test will have the scan probe on so they can see where the baby is in the uterus. So they can, as they insert the needle, they can be sure to miss the baby. And that's something that people get very, very anxious about.
Absolutely.
Absolutely understandable reasons. But be assured that, you know, in this country, people do it under scan guidance so they can see. Insert the needle. If they're going to the placenta, obviously, then they'll withdraw a tiny little sample of the placental cells. You don't feel that happening. If they're doing an amnio, then the needle goes in into a little pool of fluid, and then you can just suck out a little bit of the fluid. Some people, as with all things, some people are more sensitive to there's something going on than others. We don't use local anaesthetic to do it because actually the local anaesthetic would hurt more than just popping the needle in. And the other thing that's worth saying is that in the UK, there's very tight regulation about who can do these types of tests. And they have to be people who are very much expert in their field, who keep their skills up by doing a significant number of these tests every year. So you're getting somebody who is used to doing it. Back in the day, there used to be lots of people who would do maybe one a year. Now, if I was having anything specialist done, I'd want somebody who does it all the time. Thank you very much. Not somebody who does it once a year.
Yeah, me too.
So those samples are then sent to the lab, and then so the needle comes out, a sticking plaster goes on your tummy, and the sample goes off to the lab. The lab will then report within a few days, depending on exactly what type of testing has been requested and the method they need to do that, and then the result comes back. As far as you're concerned, again, people vary in what they say, and again, it's very much like how people are if you've had a blood test from your arm. Some people won't ever think about it again other than take plaster off an hour later. Some people will find, actually, that feels really sore for several days afterwards, and it's fine to take some paracetamol. As far as we know, taking some paracetamol in pregnancy doesn't have adverse effect on baby, and it makes you feel more comfortable. It's probably very reasonable.
I just want to wrap it up really by looking at, we have women nowadays who want scans all the time. I mean, is it a good idea to have lots of scans?
Oh, again, yes. Unlike you, I have this conversation a lot with people. And I think there are a number of things going on here. Certainly in some other parts of the world, scans are done very much more frequently. My question would be, what's the purpose of the scan? Because as we've said, these things are tests. You know, yes, you might think, well, I'd like to have another scan because I want to look at my baby. But actually, we then have to think, is there possibly any harm in doing this? Because we start from principle, we don't want to do any harm to anybody. Mm. And there's sort of two things to think about. One is that we know that the process of scanning, ultimately, if you keep doing it for long enough, will warm up the amniotic fluid and the baby. Whether that does any harm is the subject of quite a lot of research, but the research wasn't done before scans were introduced.
No.
But it does seem to be reasonable to say, well, we know that the longer a scan goes on, the more that heating up effect would take place. And so the general principle in this country is that the state, the NHS, only offers scans for specific purposes. Yeah. And they should always be for the shortest duration in which you can get the information you're looking for.
Yes. So
when you see scan places offering perhaps what they call souvenir scanning or bonding scans. Bring all your family, share a bottle of champagne and cake while you look at your baby. I'd question whether that's actually necessarily good for baby. I'm not saying that it isn't good for baby, because the science is there to back me up. I'm just saying I'm not sure that's necessarily a great idea. But actually, probably more important to think about is the more times you look at a baby on a scan, the more chances there are that you're going to find something that looks a little bit unusual. Because frankly, if you look enough people enough times, you're going to find things that look a bit unusual, because we're all a bit unusual. Yeah.
I've got a real perfect example of this. So my very good friend of mine, I've just recently looked after her with her fourth baby, actually, with me. She had her fourth baby with me. And she's prone to a few scans. She likes a few scans. And on the last scan that she had, and it looked very much, they're so good, aren't they, these scans nowadays? But it very much looked like she had an extra digit, it was a missing digit.
Right.
So the hands were up like this, and it looked like, I think it was a little finger, and she sent the picture to me. Does she see anything in this picture? And I was like, yes, I can see, you know, hands and feet and everything. And she would look at the fingers, as we count the fingers. And actually, she didn't have another scan after that, but we talked about it quite often because it was on her mind. And the first thing she wanted to do when that baby was born was, like, you know, we had to count the fingers. Yeah. So it was obviously playing on her mind. And so, you know, there is that to think about, isn't there? You're right. You can see things there. The more you look, you can see things that might worry you, might concern you. I think it's really important for us in this forum, because we are going to get out there to people also. We don't want people to feel bad about wanting to choose, you know, scans. And like you say, it is done quite a lot in other countries. I know that it's done at every antenatal appointment in you know, places like Germany and some of those, along with vaginal examinations, you know.
Indeed.
They're done.
That's a whole other conversation. Yes.
Absolutely. So, you know, we don't want people to feel bad about choosing it. But I think I understand where you're coming from in terms of, you know, we at Private Midwives, as you know, offer scan packages where they are there for, like you say, a clinical purpose. In the NHS, the antenatal pathway is generally the 12-week and the 20-week, the anomaly scan. And, you know, they don't actually add in more than that unless there's, like you say, a concern. But then we'll have women who are maybe having growth scans and, you know, serial scans for whatever reason. So I think it's important to sort of say that we're not saying that, you know, you could be harming your baby by going along with having those. I think it's more about, like you say, you know, about having to process that information and seeing stuff, and the fact that we don't actually know, not for sure. We don't know, do we?
Yeah. It's that thing about, is this actually conferring any benefit to you or to the baby?
Because,
you know, if this is about bonding with your baby, then, you know, I'm sure that you, like I do, we chat to people about how they can get to know their baby during pregnancy. And that, you know, there are other ways other than seeing.
Yes.
We don't just see our partner and bond with them in that way. We, you know, we do things with them. And so we do things with our babies. We don't need to just
talk about them in the problems in the first place, Angie.
Well, it is. I'm sorry about that, but there we go. Yes. So, yeah, it's trying to think, is this going to help me? And I think for some people, for example, you know, people who've had pregnancy losses, sometimes it really can help them just to believe that there is still a baby who is still alive in there.
Yes.
And that can be particularly in the weeks before they start feeling their movements.
For mental health, I mean, that's a huge issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
For somebody's mental health, absolutely. It can definitely be a calming thing.
Yeah, one thing a lot of people don't understand is that actually there's very little regulation over who can set up a scanning place. If you go along High Street and you see a place that offers ultrasound scans of your baby, one thing you should need to find out, is this clinical, medical type scanning, or is this described as souvenir scanning?
Yeah.
Because anybody can go, if they have the resources, and buy a scanner and can offer to do a scan for you. But if they don't know what they're looking at, that's quite scary. And I could tell you many scary stories about those things. So, take home message from that, from me, because it's a hobby horse of mine. If you're going to go and get a scan, absolutely, that's your choice. but make sure you go to somebody who is a properly qualified sonographer or a doctor who has specialist qualifications in ultrasound scanning. It's not a standard part of medical training, it's a specialist bit. And we as midwives are not taught to scan. We don't scan. We use the specialist people who are the sonographers.
Absolutely. Good message to end on there. Thank you, Angie. Obviously, if people want to find out more about what you do and maybe look you up, obviously, they can go to your website, which is, like we said, walkingwithyou.org.uk.
It is indeed. Yeah.
And you're also on Facebook, Instagram as at the Special Midwife.
Yeah.
The root of all of this is that you are one of our wonderful midwives at Private Midwives. They can go to our website. I was going to say the website obviously is www.privatemidwives.com, and go to meet the team, meet the midwives, and you'll be able to find Angie and myself actually on there. So if you want to make any inquiries about any of the screening that we've talked about today, we do appointments for counselling for screening, and also we do a screening appointments. So please do have a look on the website. You can email at info@privatemidwives.com, or you can look at the website, as I said. And there is lots of resources on our website too. We have a resource library. There's lots of stuff on there. There'll be a wealth of information on Angie's own website. So, you know, walkingwithyou.org.uk. So please go and have a look. Today, thanks for listening, everybody, to this lovely Private Midwives podcast. And we're very excited to be able to bring all this stuff out to you. Thank you so much, Angie. I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on and giving me your time and getting this out there to the birthing mamas and their families out there. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Sharon. Lovely chat. Yeah. Take care.
As I will always be saying to all the birthing mamas out there, just remember, you know, there's so much information out there, but there's always somebody who's willing to listen to you. And when it comes to your birthing journey yourself, remember, have faith, trust in your body, and you've got this.